So where we left it was that Councillor Wass would like to propose an amendment and it's just asked for Ms Tyler Moore's assistance in drafting it, and I think Ms Tyler Moore might have something for us. Ms Tyler Moore.
It's been through you, Mayor. It's been forwarded to the Chair.
Okay, we're just waiting on the technology. The meeting resumed at 6:51 PM. And is that it on the screen, Ms. Tolnall? Okay, so if we could all just take a quick moment to read it.
Through you, Mayor. Sure. Just to note, you would be replacing the existing Condition 1 with this new Condition 1.
Okay.
The part after letter A is the same wording as the current one. It just tells you you've got to build it in accordance. It's just the other two parts that are asking for an amended plan.
Okay, Councillor Wass, are you happy with what's being proposed there?
Yes, Mayor, I'm happy because now it does comply with our planning scheme.
Looking for a seconder? Seconded by Councillor Fox. You have a question now, though, Councillor Cordo, if you'd like.
Thank you, Mayor. My question is just to please clarify why it was that it wasn't in there in the first place, even though it was in contravention of the planning scheme. Let's start with that. Yep.
Ms. Tolmore.
Through you, Mayor, it was the officer's opinion that there is enough opportunity for motorbikes to be parked elsewhere, not necessarily in formal parking spaces, whether that be other bus stops or alternatively in the city.
Thanks. And so through you, Mayor, is the determination then that on cost benefit it would be better to have an additional car parking space, which is what we will in effect be sacrificing by getting another motorbike?
Well, it would just be a matter of the manager's opinion, not so much planning matter. Councillor Wass, I'm sorry, I should have asked if you'd like to open up debate on the amendment, given it's yours.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. We have this and another motion which will follow this, which has the same part there of motorcycle parking, and yet on the second one that we're about to look at, the full requirements required, but on this one it wasn't. And as I said on page 17, this proposal now does comply by having three motorcycle parking spaces. And I think it's important that if we're going to have two park and rides, that both should comply and not one. And on that basis, if our planning scheme says that there should be three, then we need a really good reason why there shouldn't be three, and there's no reason being forthcoming. And I think out of either of them, this one would probably receive more motorcycle activity than the other one. And secondly, surely when that is built and put in, it is going to make a little difference to add an additional motorcycle spot to make it three in line with our planning scheme, and I believe that we should adopt our planning scheme and ensure that the correct number are provided.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. To clarify, maybe I'm misunderstanding. So in the amendment that we're looking at, it says that the provision of motorcycle parking must not reduce the number of car parking spaces provided, but I was under the impression that Ms Tyler Moore said that there would be some sacrifice. What is the sacrifice?
Ms Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor, sorry if I misunderstood the earlier question. This parcel of land is very large. I think it would be very easy for them to accommodate in there. We just like to make it clear for all parties, don't go and reduce your car parking to fit it in. You'll need to adjust your design.
Thank you very much. And so on that basis, Mayor, with that clarity, I will be supporting this amendment.
Okay, are there any further contributions on the amendment? Do you like to sum up, Councillor Wass? Okay, so the amendment is as on screen. So it's replacing the one, the number one that's in the agenda paper with the number one that's on screen that everyone can see. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against, the amendment is carried unanimously. Would anyone else like to speak on the substantive motion? Okay, the mover and seconder originally were Councillor Cordova moved and Councillor Minchley seconded that the Planning Authority resolved that the development application for vehicle parking facility, park and ride at Browns Road, Kingston, CT 2057-06-1 for Pitt and Sherry be approved subject to the following conditions. As we said earlier, substitute one, the number one that was in the agenda for a edited version, and you'll have the motion that we're voting on. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against, motion's carried unanimously. Next item is the DA 2021-34, development application for change of use from residential to dog groom business. Recommendation on page 112. Page 51. Page 51. Oh, I've got to Huntingfield. I've gone the wrong direction. Oh, I have missed Huntingfield. How could I? Okay, this is the Huntingfield one. So it's DA 2020-695, Channel Highway, Huntingfield. Recommendations on page 68. Councillor Midgley will move. Seconded by Councillor Cordova. Councillor Midgley on the planning scheme.
Thank you, Mayor.
And we're very strict in this debate.
Thank you, Mayor. So the SDA relates to the Huntingfield Park and Ride. It's part of the city deal, 10-year congestion busting package and deal that we have for council to encourage people to get out of their car and get on a bus. It is quite a substantial park and ride at this site. There is a lot more land here compared to the other park and ride that we were looking at. It has quite a number, so I haven't got written down all the numbers here. I've got four motorcycle spaces in this one, 26 cycling parking, and sorry, I haven't got the exact number of parking. 174 vehicles, including five accessible spaces for people with disabilities. It's great. I hope people use it. I hope we're not spending too much money on the exact infrastructure of the actual where to catch a bus. I did note somewhere, and I think it was in the Access Committee notes, that perhaps the actual bus catching, like, infrastructure where you're waiting for the bus, did it have facility for only up to 8 people standing under it? Was that correct? I'm wondering. That is correct. So only 8 people standing there with 174 car parking spaces. I know we can't point around per shelter, so hopefully there's enough there. I know it's not part of this one, but just one little quick thing around the frequent buses. I hope there's quite a lot of frequent buses so that
point
we do see...
Yeah. Upheld.
Quite a lot.
Councillor Midgley, we can't... The DA has nothing to do with how many buses arrive. We need to stick to the points that are pertinent to the planning scheme.
Thank you. The points in regards to public consultation representation, I do note that there was quite a lot of public consultation and representations, and thank you, people, for doing this. And that's all from me. I look forward to hearing what other councillors speak to in regards to the planning scheme in this matter.
Councillor Bastine.
Thank you. I just wish to point out that, again, this is not complying in regards to motorcycle parking. The 174 car parking facility is required to provide 9 motorcycling parking spaces. There are only 4 provided, so it's even worse than the last one, and I think we need to have another clause put in.
Can I have a point of order, Mayor? On page 68, it does say 9 motorcycles in recommendation 6.
Okay, any further lights on? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Just to say that I welcome this proposal, and I think it's a long time coming and very good. The site is currently used for a park and ride and a bus interchange. The parking is undertaken currently in a random pattern and the site is unsealed. So the proposed park and ride facility will enhance the site and the area. and it will contribute positively to the streetscape due to the area being tidied up and the site being landscaped and sealed. So in addition to what my colleagues have mentioned, I think it's a wonderful contribution to the community, and it's been a long time coming, and I hope that it is well used, and I welcome this proposal. Thank you, Mayor.
Okay, there are no other lights on. I'll ask Councillor Mitchell. It's Councillor Midgley.
Councillor Cordova was summing up my mistake. I just wanted to point out that I'm really pleased that there are toilets here because I think it's important. There are not many other facilities that one could use in this area, and I think it's important at the end of trip or before a trip that people have those facilities. Thank you.
Okay. Councillor Midgley, sum up. Thank you. Okay, the motion was moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Cordova, that the Planning Authority resolves that the development application for vehicle parking and bus stop facility park and ride at Channel Highway Huntingfield for Pitt and Sherry be approved subject to the following conditions. They're listed in the agenda paper. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against? Motion's carried. This time we do have, on page 104, the development application for the dog groom business, with a recommendation on page 112. Who'd like to move that one? Yes, moved by Councillor Wass. Seconded by Councillor Bastone. Councillor Wass.
Thank you, Mayor. I believe this one is a fairly straightforward application. It's a change of use application. It was a residential property until several years ago, when the residents unfortunately passed away, and since that time has probably been in neglect and waiting for the right opportunity. The right opportunity has come along with Bubbles Grooming, and it's surrounded by other businesses in the area. There was, I think, one representation say about dogs barking that will not be, or would not expected to be heard on other properties, and generally these grooming places do not have or do not experience dogs barking, particularly long term. It is an infill development for commercial activity. How long they'll be there, whether it's 1 year, 1 decade or whatever, it's a good opportunity for some infill commercial development. The only restriction, I suppose, is in relation to parking, and that has been addressed within the report. And on that basis, Mayor, I'm happy to recommend to my fellow councillors that this is worthy of approval.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a question. The training classes and the puppy classes occurred already, or is this a new use ancillary to the grooming?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor, as far as I know, because they are operating without approvals, that they haven't done the puppy classes yet, but someone on the premises or neighbouring properties would know that better, but I don't believe they've commenced.
And are those puppy classes expected to be held outdoors in the area where they would be audible to the health centre next door?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor, we would expect that they would occur in the backyard area of that house.
I have concerns around this, and I'm wondering whether we can separate that particular use from the dog grooming in terms of the approval.
Through you, Mayor, if the Planning Authority wishes to restrict a use that is proposed, they can do so by way of a planning permit condition, noting any planning permit conditions may be appealed.
I'd be interested to hear whether other councillors feel the same way. The other question I have is relating to having received permission from Mr. Callis that they can park their cars next door, and that this is not supported, and I'm wondering how that can be policed by council if in fact it does continue to occur.
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, the proposal, so there's sort of two components here, which is probably going to come up in discussion anyway. One is complaint of people parking in car parks that are not this one. There's no authority to do that. That's just trespass. That's up to the site manager to deal with. The instance that Councillor Fox has mentioned where it was proposed that the premises next door could accommodate that car parking, that premises has only enough car parking for the current and existing use, so they can't reduce that unless they go and amend their original planning permit, which would allow them to do that, which is unlikely to occur. If they were to use the vacant land, if you like, they would need to make a formed car park, so they would have to build the car park. In addition to that, there's the complexity that that application didn't form part of the planning permit, so we can't just go and amend it. If we were to allow it to go down that path of allowing the second property to do that, it would need to be encumbered with a Part 5 agreement that would say, in the event that that car park, something to the effect of, if that car park was no longer available because Zap Fitness may get redeveloped, which makes sense with the vision of Kingston that it's underdeveloped currently, then the use of Bubbles would need to cease, which is obviously a gamble for them. And they would need to then apply to remove that Part 5 agreement off there. The other alternative is if they had access or access rights, they would need to amend their title to provide that right of way or access to the backyard of the subject site. So all these, we really have tried to think of the scenarios and offered that to the applicant to consider. It's obviously their choice, and they've made a choice not to make some of the suggestions that we've made. But it's not an easy fix, and it's not something the planning authority could impose tonight because that subject site did not form part of the planning application. So we have no title, it's not on the form, it wasn't on the public notification, and we don't have the consent. The outcomes could be the application is refused and they reapply, or follow the recommendation or make an alternative recommendation, but you can't bring another site into this application.
Thank you, Mayor. I have some questions around the car parking. The performance criteria P1 says the number of on-site car parking spaces must be sufficient to meet the reasonable needs of users having regard to all of the following. At I, the appropriateness of a financial contribution in lieu of parking towards the cost of parking facilities or other transport facilities where such facilities exist or are planned in the vicinity. So that's on page 108. A total of 5 parking bays are required for the proposed use. A total of 3 are proposed. So the request to waiver the required parking is not supported. It's not recommended by our planning officers. In the recommendation, the second condition provides that within 1 month of this approval, either A, the applicant must provide 5 parking spaces wholly within the site, or B, pay a cash contribution to council in lieu of the two car parking spaces which are not being provided. The amount calculated is based upon the calculations provided in Council's Policy 3.10, Cash in Lieu of Parking Policy. What is that cash contribution likely to be?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, we haven't done the calculation for this particular premises, but we would estimate that it might be in the vicinity of $75,000 to $78,000 for those 2 spaces. The councillors may not be very familiar with the policy because we have had the policy for a couple of years, but the intention is, as you can see, as Councillor Westwood's just read out, it is in the planning scheme. It's not something special to Kingborough. It's endorsed by the state government, but having it in the scheme, that the idea is that if you can't provide parking on site, that you do a cash contribution so that we build up our coffers to be able to build coffers is probably not the correct word, build up the fund that's set aside to build either, you know, a car park or a multi-storey car park. So those who aren't providing it, that are creating the traffic issues, the money goes towards we build so that we have the money to build the car parking that is required.
Okay, and so just to clarify that within one month of this approval, if this is approved tonight, the applicant needs to provide the 5 parking spaces or pay the cash contribution.
Ms. Tollemore.
Through you, Mayor, we've been fairly generous with the condition. They're already operating without approval. That's where the 1 month comes in to try and allow a bit of breathing space with the option A, which is provide the 5 parking spaces. It's going to mean that they need to... It's a very generous condition because they will have to put in new plans and designs to be able to do that because they cannot fit it in the front garden. They've more than enough room in the rear garden, but it would require some sort of modification of that building, so potentially taking off part of the side of the building, which is not unheard of. It often happens with unit developments.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Cordova.
Thanks, Mayor. Just a question, probably in a similar vein to Councillor Fox's one about enforcement. So recommendation... condition 6 is that no dogs are to be kept outside unattended at any time. Am I right in assuming that the only enforcement mechanism that really is available to the council is when neighbours dob in bad behaviour?
Ms. Tollemore.
Through you, Mayor, that's two components that's been asked. We can do enforcement at any time, but as we are not stationed there, we would rely on people making complaint, and then we would go down and investigate. And we do have under our within our compliance team methods they do for that, because as you can appreciate, people report dogs barking, but they're not barking when the council officer turns up. So there are mechanisms around that.
Thank you. My second question through you, Mayor, is about the cash in lieu parking. So the condition number 2, is it fair to say that if the applicant embarked upon the process of either getting the 5 spaces, or if they embarked on the process of getting the 5 spaces, but because of, you know, building delays and obviously construction, it's difficult to get workers and things like that at the moment. Is there flexibility there, or there is no flexibility there?
Through you, Mayor, the condition is not written with the flexibility. It can be amended. You could have unless otherwise approved in writing by the responsible authority or by council, comma, within 1 month of this approval. So that allows the flexibility. If you don't have the flexibility, it means that they must make an application to amend the planning permit.
Thank you.
Further contributions on this? Councillor Wass.
Thank you, Mayor. What we're really talking about is the proposal being for a change of use that will activate an existing unused space and provide for an additional commercial business within the central business area of Kingston. The business will provide for additional passive surveillance of public spaces within the vicinity of the site and will also provide an additional service to the surrounding area. And as regards to dogs being left unattended outside, that wouldn't be a part of the deal, and I would be very surprised if ever encountered a dog unattended outside, because that's not the way in which these people operate. So I do recommend the motion and suggest to councillors to give it serious consideration to recommend as well.
Okay, the motion was moved by Councillor Wass, seconded by Councillor Bastone. By the way, Councillor Bastone left the meeting at 7:12 p.m. The motion is that the Planning Authority resolves that the development application for change of use from residential to dog grooming business, general retail and hire and signed retrospective at 23 to 27 John Street, Kingston, for Mrs. J.A. Webster, be approved subject to the following conditions, and they're as listed within the agenda paper. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against, motion is carried, with the exception of Councillor Bastone, who's not in the room. Next item is... DA 2020-474, Communal Resident, 16 O'Connor Drive, Kingston. Mover and seconder, please. Moved by Councillor Cordova, seconded by Councillor Westwood. Councillor Cordova.
I think that's okay. Councillor Mitchell's hand went up first.
I've already done it.
That's okay. Sorry. Not a problem.
I often treat a bit unfairly because I don't. Yeah.
That's okay.
I'll make sure you get the next one.
Thank you very much, Mayor. So what we're looking at here is a communal residence that's being that's been proposed, and essentially it's to provide by system-built homes on behalf of Supported Affordable Accommodation Trust with the intent of providing a communal home for people with disabilities. The proposed development is for the construction of a building to be used as a communal residence. So as you can see in the report, this site is within the Spring Farm estate, which is undergoing rapid residential development. And this particular site of 744 square metres is currently zoned general residential and backs onto Whitewater Creek Environmental Management Zone. I think that it's a good proposal, and it provides for an important the construction of a communal residence, which I think will be welcome in the community and something that is needed. And so I welcome the debate. Thanks, Mayor.
There might not be much debate. Councillor Fox.
Just a question. On page 113, section 2.3, statutory planning, there is a line there that says the clause excludes requirements such as north-facing windows to habitable rooms and the requirement for supply of private open space. However, in the actual body of the document, they do provide north-facing habitable spaces on page 134 and 5. And I'm just wondering why that clause is there on page 133.
Mr. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor, the application is considered a non-dwelling development, so the planning scheme specifies if it's a non-dwelling development. Whilst I appreciate, obviously, it acts as a dwelling for those who reside in it, it's a different type of development, and the state provisions just exclude some of those. But, like you said, it does have north-facing living areas.
Understand. Thank you.
No, the lights are on. Councillor Cordova, would you like to sum up? Motion is moved by Councillor Cordova and seconded by Councillor Westwood. The motion, Councillor Bastone returned at 7:15pm, so she has been here for the debate. And the motion is that the Planning Authority resolves that the development application for communal residence at 16 O'Connor Drive, Kingston, for system-built homes be approved, subject to the following conditions, and they're as listed in the agenda paper. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against, motions carried unanimously. Next item is on page 155, and it's development application for subdivision creating additional new 20 lots, stage 4B and 4C at 41 Alfred's Garden, Kingston. There's a recommended motion on page 176. Would anyone like to move and or second that? Moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Midgley. Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. I've watched this development grow for many years, and I know that it was quite unique originally because they went for a higher or smaller lot sizes within the subdivision in order to provide lots of public open space. But I do recommend this motion. I think there is a further subdivision of lots and provision of both public open space linkages being suggested. That would be very important. And also offsetting the valuable environmental vegetation, particularly large trees that are habitat for endangered species. And I think this will complement the existing offset area and if it's properly managed will make a very nice subdivision. Thank you.
Further speakers? Councillor Street.
Mayor, I just have some questions in relation to this. I've got a query in relation to the master plan, particularly in relation to the track that's proposed and the acquisition of more public open space when it wasn't identified in the original master plan. So my first question is, what obligations do we have in relation to that original master plan?
Ms. Stevenson.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. The master plan is referenced in the planning scheme under the specific area plan for Kingston Green, and there are standards within that specific area plan that require use and development to be consistent with the master plan. There is a performance criteria which allows variations to that. There are also a number of other specific standards within that specific area plan that relate to development on those subsequent lots. There is nothing specific about public open space in relation to the provision of footways. There are other provisions in the subdivision in the zone standards relating to public open space and the provision of public open space.
So I suppose following on from that, my next question is, when the development first started, my understanding is that there was a significant public open space contribution well in excess of what would have been required at the time, and certainly in excess of what would be ordinarily required now. Is it the case that the understanding was that that public open space contribution in the original development was considered to be once and for all for the site, or was it the case that that was simply for those first stages on the understanding that we might come back later for further provision?
Ms. Stevenson.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. The master plan provided, as its name suggests, a master plan for how that site could be developed. In the original endorsement of the master plan, council endorsed that, and there was an application that was lodged back in 2001 for a subdivision to create some super lots and to approve the master plan. Those super lots that were approved as part of that application were never seen through to titles being created for those super lots, and the development of the individual lots went ahead without the creation of those super lots. As part of those original lots that were subdivided, there was some public open space provided, but it wasn't all provided at that stage. That's what's shown in the master plan. So in essence, as each stage of the subdivision progresses, there is a requirement under the planning scheme and under the legislation to provide public open space. You can see on page 160 there is a plan showing the layout that's within the planning scheme, which is the master plan. You can see that there are a number of areas in green on that plan, which are the areas that are shown to be public open space. To date, because of the way the development has proceeded so far, not all of those areas of public open space have actually been created and provided to council. At the moment, there's the ones that come down through the centre of the road, the Alfred's Gardens Road, which have been created. They're essentially wider median strips, if you like, between the two roads, which also serve as part of the stormwater treatment and detention system. The only other place of public open space that's actually been created at this point is the area at the end of that strip. There's a larger green area which is sort of in the corner where the back of the Bunnings site is. That was created as part of the subdivision that was approved in 2015. And other than that, the other there's one footway that links between just near that public open space lot back into the subdivision road. They're the only areas of public open space that have actually been created at this point in time. The other two sections that you can see that sort of are heading down the road that goes to the pointy triangular bit, both of those will not be realised as because the bottom one has already been absorbed within the area of the offset, conservation offset from the previous stage, and the second one, which the circle actually has moved slightly, unfortunately, but the circle that is around it, that one will not be provided as part of this stage either. The only other area of public open space is the larger area over where the dam is on the other side. At this point in time, that part of the site has not been subdivided and that public open space not provided.
I mean, obviously, this master plan well predates my involvement on council. I was 10 when it happened. I'm not going to pass any judgment on how this was done and why it was done this way, why there was a master plan. But I suppose I've probably given away what I think about it by saying that. Is there an issue here in that we have a master plan which identifies public open space areas and we are now proposing to deviate from that master plan to take a different area as public open space?
Ms. Stevenson.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. There's no reason why council can't do that. Certainly the planning scheme and the legislation requires council to consider the needs of public open space for any subdivision application that's submitted to council. And as you would be aware, that can be either in the form of land or as a cash contribution. In this particular case, there have been changes over time with the master plan. As you quite rightly pointed out, it was some time ago that the master plan was created, 20 years ago, and so obviously a lot's changed in that time, including the design of the subdivision. It's also important to note that at the time that the original master plan was approved, it was approved subject to the management protection of vegetation, and so that has led to changes to the master plan in terms of the offset requirements under the planning scheme. So there have been changes over time, and it's not, council has the power under the planning scheme to require those additional public open space. As I mentioned before, there are some areas of public open space that were identified in the master plan which are not now being provided. So you know, that shows the flexibility in terms of being able to manoeuvre around those sort of changes. It's been council officers' assessment that a link through that area is important to the network of connection of pedestrian movement through Kingston.
One last question, Mayor, and then I'll make a contribution. Is the development application otherwise in accordance with the original master plan? Put aside the condition for the public open space contribution for the walkway, would the DA otherwise be in accordance with the master plan?
Ms. Stevenson.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. It's generally in accordance, but it's certainly not specifically in accordance. The lot sizes that are being proposed are different to the lot sizes that have been identified in the master plan. A couple of them comply, but the majority of them are actually smaller than what was identified in the master plan. There has been a change to the road layout a little bit as well in terms of the connections. So it's generally the same, but it is slightly different. The number and locations of lots vary slightly as well.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mayor, and thank you to Ms. Stevenson for those answers. That has really helped. I start from the general proposition that if council agree to act in a particular way and allow development in a particular way, then we should be consistent with that, especially where we've not given particular timeframes for the realisation of a master plan and the realisation of a development. That's a significant concern to me here. Like I said, I didn't want to pass judgment on the way that this was done, but I think it is relevant to say that that if something like this were coming before council again, I'd have serious reservations about doing allowing a development to be conducted in this manner, purely because as time progresses, standards do too. Things become relevant that potentially weren't at the time, and things change. And so it concerns me that council can create an expectation that a development's going to be allowed to go forward in a particular way, only to then change its mind later down the track. Now, there's been a significant period of time elapsed since the master plan was first brought to life, but it doesn't necessarily change the fact in my mind that that was done, and that we didn't put any time frames around it, and it, there is still that expectation that we're going to allow development to continue in the manner in which the master plan was created. The other side of that coin is that I'm now being told that the development application is not necessarily in strict accordance with the master plan either, so we can't have it both ways. There's an extent to which developers and applicants can't have it both ways. If they want the protection of the master plan, in my mind, then they need to develop in accordance with the master plan. Now, I'm not sure to what degree the development application differs from the master plan, but I'm hearing that generally it's in accordance, but there are some differences with lot size. To be perfectly honest, I'm not quite sure what to do here, and I will wait to hear from others around the table before I make a decision about whether I ask for an amendment. But certainly, to my mind, I would consider an amendment that removes the requirement for the walkway as public open space, provided that I could get some assurance that the public open space would have to be developed otherwise in accordance with the master plan. But like I say, I'll be happy to hear from others around the table before I put any proposition of that nature forward.
Councillor Bastow, and then Councillor Westwood. Councillor Bastow.
Thank you. My first question is on the provision of the public open space linkage. How many lots will that take up? So the application is for 20 lots. If that public open space goes through, how many lots will be lost?
Ms. Stevens.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. There'll actually be no loss of lots. The public open space connection goes through the area. It's part of the conservation offset. So the public open space will not have any impact on the residential lots that are proposed to be created. There is an existing section of the balance lot, which is the very pointy end of the triangle, that is currently a conservation area, which is protected under a Part 5 agreement. That was as a result of the previous subdivision in 2015. This proposal includes increasing that conservation area. So where the residential lots are being created, the next section between the back of the residential lots and the existing conservation area will form part of that same conservation area. The public walkway that we're talking about in terms of public open space, the track, is contained wholly within that conservation area and outside the residential lots.
That was not my understanding. If I continue on with my questions, this existing informal track is in fact a track people have put trespassing on private land. Is that right?
Stevenson.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. There's no formal... The land is in private ownership and there is no public right-of-way over that land currently.
So why would we be giving people the right-of-way over someone's private land?
Stevenson.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. The proposal is... the condition on the permit is to require that land to be transferred to public ownership and therefore the public would have a right to access over that. The purpose of the public open space is to provide a connection that would link in with existing and future public walkways. It connects at the pointy end, at the pointy end of the triangle, to an existing council land through the subdivision, which was known as the Algona Road subdivision, at the end of Redwood Road, and that connects through to the walking track that goes along past AAD. It would provide a connection for people walking the other direction, so from Huntingfield through this subdivision and through to Kingston that way, avoiding the need to walk around the long way, if you like, along the Channel Highway.
And my next question is, if the road, if in fact we followed the master plan, would they not be able to walk along a well-lit road to link these two bits, rather than walking through what is or could be quite a dangerous area? It's very bushy.
Ms. Stevenson.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. There would be no road down that end because, as I explained before, that area is part of a conservation area and there's no residential subdivision to occur in that section. So the extent of the road is much further up. So there would be no physical connection between the public road network and the walking track in, at the end if a public open space lot was not taken.
Okay, and my next question, thank you for that, is about the size of the lots being smaller than what was originally on the master plan, or some of them. sorry. How do they compare with the size of the lots for affordable housing in Huntingfield that are proposed?
Stevenson.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. I'm not 100% sure of the exact proposed lot sizes in Huntingfield, but in terms of my understanding, those lots are quite small, those ones in Huntingfield. I think these would be larger than that. These lots are around 300 to 400 square metres. They're probably more consistent with the smaller lots that have been created over in the Spring Farm Estate at the Grand Muse part of that subdivision, if you're familiar with that one. Yeah, so they're that smaller sort of inner residential zoned land. My understanding with the Huntingfield ones is there's a variety, but I think some of them are a little bit smaller and go down to about 200 square metres as well. But I'm not 100% sure on that one.
Thank you.
Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. I also have some questions relating to the master plan and the provision of public open space. It's noted on page 160 that the proposed subdivision layout includes the loss of a small park area that was included within the Kingston Green Residential Development Master Plan for the site. Could I please have some more information about the size of that small park area in terms of metres squared or an approximate estimation, and whether the pathway would offset that?
Ms. Stevenson.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. I can't tell you what the area of that lot was because it was never that detailed, excuse me, in terms of the master plan. It didn't provide dimensions and lot sizes. You can see on the plan on page 160, unfortunately the red circle has moved off the image, but the area we're talking about is that green section just at the top of that red circle. Effectively, the red circle, the edge of that circle goes over the edge of that public open space lot. So you can get an idea in relation to the relative size of it compared to those lots. You will have to forgive me because even with my glasses on, I cannot read that because it's such small print. But the yellow lots, what's the lot sizes of the yellow lots meant to be? So if they're sort of 450 to 600, you can get an idea of the size of one of those lots is roughly around that. So it looks to be maybe, I don't know, 3 to 4 size of those lots. So it could be anywhere, you know, around 1,800 square metres, 2,000 square metres, something like that. But I am just guessing because it's very much a conceptual plan and there were no dimensions provided.
Sorry, how many, your guesstimate was how many metres squared? Well, I'm guessing it looks to be around 3 to 4 of the individual lots, which are sort of the 450 to 600 square metres. So, you know, say they're 500 square metres each, and 3 to 4, you're looking at somewhere between 1,500 and 2,000 square metres. Is that a guess?
So that's a fairly large low-density residential block size. And so I'm just a bit unclear about when the master plan came. Did the master plan come to the planning authority when it first came to council?
Ms. Stevenson.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. My understanding, and whilst I was a little older than Councillor Street, I was working at Kimber Council at the time, and my understanding is that the master plan was approved as part of an application that was submitted in 2001 and approved in 2002. The master plan itself, the reference in the planning scheme, the previous planning scheme, because it was referenced in the KPS 2000, so the Kimber Planning Scheme 2000, which was the scheme that predated the current one, it was referenced in that scheme and it referred to the document as endorsed by Council in November 2001. So I think there must have been some sort of decision by Council to adopt that master plan. It was considered as part of the permit in 2002, and then when the Kingborough Planning Scheme 2000 came into effect, which was the 1st of July 2004, there was a standard included within that planning scheme that specifically referenced the master plan.
Thank you. I guess I have concerns that someone can put forth a master plan for an area that's accepted by council, which includes things like small park areas, and then amend them to mean that there's more residential housing in there. We saw only last week that we had a notice of motion for council to put the bill of putting a play space into an area of high density housing. And whilst I acknowledge that housing supply is a really very real issue, I feel like developers have a responsibility to contribute to public open spaces instead of just providing a cash in lieu contribution, because there are a lot of families that move into these areas, and it concerns me that the master plan, which showed a small park area, is now not including a small park area. That's probably more of a statement than any kind of question. One more question is, you mentioned that the number of lots varies slightly. I'm assuming that there are now more lots proposed than there originally were. Do we know how many additional lots compared to the original master plan is being proposed for this, development?
Ms. Stevenson.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. I can't give you an exact number because the subdivision that has previously occurred on this site has also varied somewhat from the master plan. This stage is the completion of that previous stage, and you also need to bear in mind that whilst the master plan shows residential lots going over that entire site, that was only approved on the basis that the issue regarding the natural vegetation on the site needed to be managed and protected as well. So in doing that, when the application in 2015 was considered by council, they proposed to offset the loss of the vegetation for the stage of the subdivision they were doing then, and they have had to make some changes to the designs to accommodate that. So in essence, the previous subdivision or the previous stage and this stage have varied from that master plan and have increased the number of lots for that particular section, but by contrast, the area that was previously identified as potentially having residential lots subject to compliance with the planning scheme requirements now has been included in the conservation offset, so those lots will not be developed. So if you like, they've they've reduced the size and changed them slightly in exchange, for want of a better term, of the offset area. So the overall number is probably similar or maybe even less than what was originally proposed.
Thank you.
Can I just, because of just follow on, can I just ask a question before I go to Councillor Watts? That sort of got back onto that same issue that I'm having trouble with. You're talking about this conservation area. Can you just clarify, this is the conservation area that the master plan shows housing in, but we're proposing to acquire for public open space. How is it that it got from 2001, where there was going to be housing, to now being a conservation area? Was that agreed with the owner, or what was the mechanism, and how is it a conservation value area? Is that through a Part 5 or another mechanism?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. So the original master plan was approved on the basis that the land would be developed for residential purposes, but it was acknowledged that the vegetation issues that at the time of the master plan, they didn't do the vegetation assessment of that the existing vegetation on that part of the site. And so part of the approval at the time was on the basis that the vegetation issues, including the requirements for the flora and fauna surveys, was to be undertaken and that strategies were to be provided to manage and protect this flora and fauna and vegetation. So whilst the master plan shows residential lots in that area, it was always subject to an assessment of the vegetation and the impacts of that development on that vegetation. And that assessment would be done in accordance with whatever the planning scheme rules were at the time of the subdivision. The first stage of the subdivision went through back in the early 2000s, where the areas there wasn't vegetation impacted. So it's only the later subdivision or stages that have occurred in 2015 and currently that have impacted the vegetation. So the previous stage, which was referred to as Stage 4A in the master plan, was approved by council in 2015 and was subject to the provisions of the 2000 planning scheme, which for those councillors that were on council at the time of that scheme, there was a schedule 10 in that planning scheme, which deals with the protection of vegetation. It's very similar to the current provisions in the Biodiversity Code in that it requires impacts to be avoided in the first instance, minimised, mitigated and offset. In that situation, they were allowed to remove some vegetation for the purposes of the residential lots, and in to offset that loss, they provided a conservation area, and that conservation area was through a Part 5 agreement on the title. They had the option to transfer that land to council, or they could retain it in private ownership, but it would be subject to the Part 5 agreement. That is the option that they chose, so it is still in private ownership. It does form part of the balanced land, but it has a Part 5 agreement on it requiring it to be protected.
Thank you. Councillor Watts.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. I do remember this application coming forward with the plan put in place for it. I think Council of the Day was very excited about it because he'd offered something a little bit different. In those days, people were getting away from the idea of having huge back lawns, and a lot of people, particularly the elderly, which were attracted to it, didn't want to spend one day a week mowing lawns. And they saw that the smaller lot provided an ideal outlet for them and an area. When the master plan became before councillors, council made the decision that he did offer something totally different, and the whole master plan, that is the whole from go to woe, that the whole master plan would create, if you like, a different living environment, which the council of the day believed it would be different and probably even set a benchmark as to future subdivisions. And I guess if you look at that now compared with some other subdivisions, those people that are living there are in fact probably more regarding their own area as far superior to that of others. One of the things is that, as I said, the lot sizes are smaller, but the other thing is people are mixing. People talk to each other. There's a few seats around where you can walk down in front of your home, sit down, and you've probably got someone else from another resident coming along and sitting and talking. So people are, in fact, engaging more in communication. So in a standard development area, people probably don't even know their next-door neighbour. Here, it's a case where people do and do share time with not just their next-door neighbour, but several away from them. And I haven't found anyone who doesn't like being there. What's turned in to be, I suppose, in the last 10 years is, more so, it's affordable housing. And we talk about affordable housing and what we're going to do. And the overall master plan provided affordable housing for that very reason. It was interesting to hear the vegetation issues, because if you go in the main entrance of Redwood Road, you have a look at a median strip and it's all bare. In fact, it looks horrible. That was trees when that was handed over, and unfortunately council cut all those trees down. So we're talking about protection of species, and I would suggest that the master plan and the idea and the concept was to keep trees, but in this case we're the ones that have gone in and destroyed the trees. So let's call spades spades, if you like, and look at where we're going. To my knowledge, everything that has been set up in that master plan has actually occurred. We talk about, and it was touched on by Councillor Bastone, an illegal track. Do you know that illegal track's even got a couch on it? Do you know it's got a TV there too, and that's where the people gather? Do you know that one day a match is going to be struck and all that's going to go up in flames? Why do you want a track there? It just astounds me that, and again, I think it was Councillor Bastone said, there's going to be a street through there that will provide people an opportunity. But if you look at the total master plan, people are not going to walk that way. People are not going to walk to Algona Road. They're going to walk down to the Channel Highway. Because when completed, there will be linkages, and those shorter linkages. Now, people do not walk 800 metres if they can walk 200 metres. And most people would walk that 200 metres. I'm a little bit concerned that we want to make provision for that public open space and take away from the whole concept. I think if we do that, and to me, I've always said, if you've got a contract, you should honour it. I believe a contract is a contract for perpetuity. I believe a master plan is a master plan for perpetuity. Now, whether you like it or whether you don't like it, I don't believe that we can go and modify a master plan, which is not going to create any benefits, A, for the area concerned, and B, for the future population. I would be happy, Mayor, to test the water in relation to the recommendation on page 176, and I would like to amend paragraph 1, and the last line, it says, plans must generally be in accordance with the advertised plans, full stop, and the index paragraph underneath that to be deleted.
Okay.
So comes to the advertised. Sorry, Mayor, do you
want to? He's talking about 4.1. That,
yep.
And he's asked for everything to be deleted. Oh, in fact, that's Morton it. Knows. There you go.
Behind you.
So that the bit is shaded out will be deleted. Is that right, Councillor Loss?
That's correct, Mayor.
Yep. So we're looking for a seconder for the amendment. Seconded by Councillor Bastone. Councillor Loss on the amendment.
Thank you, Mayor. I'll be very brief. I believe this puts integrity back into the master plan that we agreed to in 2002, and I think we should adopt the master plan and support the master plan that was set up. We've got an opportunity here to continue with this area in the master plan style, and I believe that even today, that master plan really sets the standard, if you like, of housing in our area. And if you don't believe me, I'd suggest just simply ask a number of residents in that area, and that's all I need to say, Mayor.
thanks. Before I go to Councillor Midgley, just because I'm very confused at this point, Councillor Wass made a contribution about building the road and that providing a linkage, but the area where Councillor Wass is suggesting that we can build a linkage, isn't that the area where there's a Part 5 agreement that says you can't build a road?
Mr Mayor, yes, that is correct.
Right. So in order to build the road, we'd have to remove the Part 5 as well? Council would have to agree to remove the Part 5 in order to build a road. Is that correct?
So the current conservation area was a requirement of a permit condition on a previous permit, and it was an offset for that subdivision. So council would have to be agreeable to ending the Part 5 agreement, but I would suggest that in doing so there would have to be an alternative offset provided, because otherwise the requirements of the planning scheme and that planning permit could not be met.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I just have a bit of confusion regarding the road. So today when I did speak to the applicant, they noted that the road that is currently in this plan would actually link to Algona Road. And I've heard Councillor Bastone also ask that, and Councillor Wass noted it, but the planning... Ms Stevenson, who I must note was so knowledgeable and so much information regarding this application... said that that road does not lead to Algona Road, but the walking track that is proposed does link to Algona Road. Can I just get clarification about that, please?
Through you, Mr Mayor. You can see on page 160, which shows the master plan, putting to one side the conservation zone and the Part 5 area for the moment, if you look at the road layout on that master plan document, you can see that the road ends prior to the end of that triangular piece, and there are actually three lots that come off the end of what would effectively be a cul-de-sac. So there is no road connection in the master plan, nor is there a footway connection to Algona Road. So if the road design was to be done in accordance with this plan, there would be no connection to Algona Road.
Okay, so, I mean, we walk around Spring Farm and Whitewater and it's startling to see the disconnections and the pathways, and we've spoken around, we couldn't really talk about Huntingfield and the lack of connections. Connections and walkability and active transport are so important and vital. That's point one. And point two, in regards to the question that the Mayor raised regarding then the loss of potential Part 5, I believe that we need this Part 5 agreement for the biodiversity and habitat that is stated in the report, so I don't support the amendment.
Councillor Cordover.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm going to race through my contribution for this amendment, but it speaks to the other bit as well. Some context. A natural value, this is on page 156, a natural values assessment was submitted with the application and confirms that the subject land also contains the following priority biodiversity values. So it's got 0.6 hectares of Eucalyptus ovata forest, which is high priority biodiversity value. It's got 3.72 hectares of Eucalyptus amygdalina forest and woodland on sandstone, which is high priority, foraging and potential nesting habitat for the endangered swift parrot, and also for the skipper. So that's why we're talking about this public open space, but there's also environmental elements here as well, and that's why it's a conservation area. So it is a good subdivision. I was there today and it's very livable. And as Councillor Wass said, it is actually a really nice neighbourhood. It is a subdivision done well so far. And there's little details like coloured footpaths and boutique street lamps. So they're small lots with affordable houses and it looks great. And you can tell that the residents take great pride in that neighbourhood. And so we can only anticipate that the culmination of this addition to the subdivision will be good as well. What we're doing here, looking at this proposal, is we're weighing up the sanctity of the original master plan against the critical need for the public open space. And an example is given in this report on page 166 about the recent petition for public open space linkages in Spring Farm. So we've got 546 signatures. So page 166 of this proposal reads, contemporary community expectations in relation to the provision of these kinds of assets, that is, walkways, continue to increase in line with changing development patterns and population density. A draft connectivity plan, Kingston to Huntingfield, was recently developed by Council in February of this year, which clearly shows the desired link passing through the balanced lot of this subject site, identifying an opportunity to extend upon the existing informal track currently used by the community. That's end quote. We need more affordable housing. The council, this council, endorsed a master plan in 2001 to create those super lots. A natural values assessment has been conducted. Now, the wider median strips that we heard about today, and Councillor Wass referenced as having lost the trees that were on them, there are still vegetated median strips there that look great. They help with stormwater management, they look nice, and they definitely improve neighbourhood amenity and have the added benefit of acting as traffic calming measures. It is a nice neighbourhood, and it's a sensitive development that has taken place there, and it's just the type of affordable and charming community landscapes that I think that our community welcomes. However, this larger issue of public open space remains the key contention within this proposal. The balance that we need to strike as a planning authority is to consider the needs of public open space and to identify that public open space might differ from the master plan that was endorsed by this council 20 years ago. The council officer's assessment in this case is that a link area is necessary and beneficial to improve our pedestrian networks. Of course, it is true, as we've heard, that if a residential street were to go down there with footpaths, that would have the same effect, but there's obviously this contention about whether or not you could withdraw the Part 5 agreement, and so it goes. But the important thing is that I mentioned these conservation aspects here. So walking down a pedestrian footpath on a street is not the same as walking through conservation area bushland or connecting with our tracks and trails and our network, our pedestrian network. This municipality needs more affordable housing and welcomes appropriate development. And as a general principle, I think we do need to be consistent with all our agreements. However, the bit that struck me the most is recognising that we need to act within the planning scheme and within the best interests of the community. If we turn our attention to page 168, where it says, quote, while this link may have been identified in the existing master plan for the site, this was approved almost 20 years ago, and the character of the area has changed considerably during this time, including exponential growth. And I think the public would benefit from the connection that has been proposed by our council staff in contradiction to the amendment that's been proposed. I think that it's in line with what the community expects from us. And I think the community and the residents of this subdivision would benefit from having that walking track through a bushland conservation area by council assuming the responsibility for that public open space lot. And so that's why I'll be voting against the amendment on this occasion.
Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. Look, I'm sorry, I don't want to drag this out any longer than is necessary, but I think the penny on this has finally dropped for me. And I just need to make sure that my understanding is correct. The area within which the proposed walkway is contained is wholly within an area that's protected under a conservation covenant within a Part 5 agreement. Is that correct?
Ms. Stevens.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Not 100% correct in that there is only one part that's currently under a Part 5 agreement. The proposal for this subdivision is for an additional area to be contained within that area, conservation area under Part 5, and the public open space lot will be wholly within, it won't be within that conservation area because obviously that conservation area will not include the public open space lot. But yes, it effectively is in that. It is not impacting on the proposed residential lots or any existing residential lots.
But it would be an extension of the conservation area as it currently stands.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Sorry, I'm not quite clear on that question.
Sorry. I thought I understood this perfectly.
And now I absolutely don't. Okay.
Is it helpful if we can put a copy of the plan on the...
That would be
probably the best one to put on... I don't know if Amanda can...
No, that's not going to help me at all.
If we can put the plan that's on page 167...
I'm sorry, everyone.
Probably... I can probably make it, hopefully, a little bit clearer for you. Yeah, that's the one. Oh, that one. Yes, that one. So you can see on that plan the area to the top of the plan where you can just see there's been a couple of houses built, and you can see the other lots that are all vacant. So that's the subdivision that was approved in 2015. That subdivision, the Part 5 agreement for the conservation offset area for that subdivision is from the very pointy part of the triangle up to, I'm not sure exactly where it is, but probably just a little bit further above the red circle. So it sort of goes a bit further up from that. So where you can see that sort of, I don't know if it's concave, bend in the track in that yellow part, it's roughly about there. So at the moment, that from there down to the pointy bit is contained within the conservation area for the Part 5 agreement. This proposal will provide for the subdivision of the residential lots directly to the south of that existing subdivision from 2015. And the area between that, those lots, so... do you mind if I actually take my microphone and go on point? Will that actually make it easier? Sorry. It might make it a bit easier. So this that section up there is where the subdivision is occurring. The current offset for that subdivision is the line somewhere through here. And this section is all within that conservation zone, the Part 5 agreement. The new subdivision is coming down here with the road coming down so this is Eleni Avenue, not quite tall enough, that comes down this way, and the, Alfred's Gardens, which is the other road, so they'll basically come down and they'll connect up in around, and so there'll be residential lots off that. This section through...
I don't think that was you.
I'm not quite that clever. This section through the middle here, which is the north of the current offset area and south of the new lots, will form an additional conservation offset area, which is to partially offset the vegetation that's being lost here. This track will go through what is effectively all conservation area.
Will be after, if
the subdivision is approved. And the lot that you can see that's just to the north of the, where the yellow line is, that one there, thank you, Amanda, that is currently a public open space lot that was taken as part of the conservation offset for this subdivision, but that parcel was actually transferred to council. So that is a council-owned parcel of land notated on the title as public open space.
Okay, so I suppose here's my next question. I sort of got it into my head that we wouldn't be taking any land that had potential for development, but we are, aren't we?
No, we're not. Because the extent of the land that's available to be developed is being developed as part of these lots, because the rest of that area would be within the conservation zone, except for the...
But only if we approve it in the manner in which you've suggested.
In terms of whether you take the public open space or you don't, that area where the track is located would be within the conservation area. It's just that it wouldn't be in public ownership because the applicant is not proposing to transfer that land to council. They're proposing to keep it in private ownership and have the Part 5 agreement over it. So the only difference will be that the public open space, the track, would be a title on its own that would be transferred to council, and the land on either side of that track would be within the conservation zone and subject to the Part 5 agreement. If you don't take the public open space lot, the track just forms part of the conservation area and would be required to be rehabilitated in accordance with the conservation management plan.
So what you're saying is there needs to be a the conservation area to offset the vegetation that's being taken anyway. That's what's been proposed as the conservation area. Was that agreed to by the developer?
That formed part of their application, yes.
Right, so really the only thing that we're arguing about in terms of Councillor Wass's amendment is whether that stays as part of a conservation area under a Part 5 or becomes public open space in Council's ownership.
That is correct, yes. Obviously the major difference there is that if it doesn't form a public open space lot in Council ownership, it would stay in private ownership, but it wouldn't be able to be developed. It would be subject to the requirements of the Conservation Management Plan under the Part 5 agreement and would have to be rehabilitated, and there'd be no public access allowed to
that. May not be able to answer this question, Ms. Stevenson, but forgive me. Is there any benefit that you can see for the developer in keeping that as privately owned land with a conservation condition in a Part 5 as opposed to being public open space? I mean, outside of the remotest possibility that we might amend the Part 5 later or agree to amend the Part 5 later, is there any benefit there at all?
I can't speak on behalf of the developer, obviously, but in terms of the difference would be that the land would be maintained in private ownership, because that is the proposal that's before council, that the applicant has put to council, and it would mean that the owner of that land would be responsible for the maintenance and management of that land. If it was transferred to council, it would be council that would be responsible for the maintenance of that land.
But there's nothing in that Part 5 that would allow it to be developed without it being amended, without the Part 5 agreement being amended.
That is correct.
So just to follow on again, sorry. Given what you've just said, then I'm finding it hard to understand why Council doesn't want to accept a cash in lieu payment as opposed to this. Why, given your argument is that they can't develop in anything anyway. So why are we then wanting to, instead of taking cash, then transfer it into public ownership and have to maintain it ourselves? What's the benefit?
The benefit is that it would provide a connection for the public, because the proposal that has been submitted to council as far as the application is an offset proposal that involves a conservation area but the land to be retained in private ownership. So because it's being retained in private ownership, the public would not have any right to access that. If we were to take a cash in lieu contribution for public open space, unless we purchase using that cash in lieu contribution, a right over that land, then there'll be no public access through there. So the assessment by our officers is that a connection through there is important, and it's an important community benefit and a community link, and there is provisions under the planning scheme and the legislation to enable us to take that as land.
I guess I'm just having trouble with, because the report says that the developer is actually offering cash, but you're saying that the developer can't develop the land anyway. So I don't understand why, and unfortunately for us, the ridiculousness is he's there and we can't discuss. So I'm just really confused as to why there's a passionate request for it to provide cash to us instead. Obviously the developer thinks it is developable. You're saying it's not. Just to clarify for my... Can you just point out where the existing covenant, oh no, just at the best of your ability, where does the existing covenant, what, can you point to the piece of land where the existing covenant goes? Just
somewhere, so it's that section.
Right.
I'm not 100% sure exactly how far up it goes, but it's roughly about there, I think.
Okay.
It's right down to that point. So all of that in that area there.
So if this doesn't go, if Councillor Wass's amendment was to go through, then they would be able to develop the top part of that yellow line?
No, that's not correct, because there are the proposal that's before council is for this section through here to also be included within a Part 5 conservation area to offset the loss of this vegetation, which they need to remove to provide for the new residential lots that they're proposing to subdivide.
Okay, so there's other lights on. I don't think I'm ever... This is Yeah. Councillor Bastine.
Okay, just please stay there. Where the yellow line wiggles its way around, from the bottom of the conservation area that outlined in white, up high, right up high. No, right up the top bit. Yeah, up there. Yes, thank you. Is there no possibility for even two houses below that? On the original plan, it shows houses the whole length of that strip, the whole thing down with a road that comes down, which joins up, I think, with Elford Road.
Trying to balance microphones and plans. So effectively, the subdivision is, oh, I can't quite reach, but just where, yeah. Where Alfred's garden, you can see the red line, yes. No, other side, Amanda, the other one, yep from there. Yep. So that road is going to extend down, yes. It's going to come down here, yep. And then it's going to go across,
okay.
And then it's going to go up and join up there.
All right, when it comes down.
Yep.
Surely houses can be built going back to the boundary?
No, because that land is proposed as part of this application to form part of the offset area, the conservation offset area. And they need as much of that area as they can to meet the planning scheme requirements. So if you have a look at your subdivision plan, which is in the attachments on page 196, you can see that... If you're all looking at that, you can see that the road that comes down from Alfred's Garden, so this one on this side, comes down and there are no lots on the left-hand side of the page, if you like, so the western side of that road. The lots are all to the east and to the south.
So the whole of that balance area is worthless as far as development goes. Even though we've agreed to it on the master plan... to all be housing of some, you know, maybe 60 or 70 houses.
So part of that land is already under a Part 5 agreement, and the other portion of that land is required to be under a Part 5 agreement in order to meet the planning scheme requirements. That is part of the application that's before council in terms of what the applicant proposed to meet those planning scheme requirements. And there are a number of ways they're achieving the offset. So land is part of that, but they don't have enough land. So we're allowing them to have more residential lots and have less on-site offset in order to develop that land.
Okay, but if they pay, if there is money handed over, surely they need less of the land under the Part 5 agreement, which means there could be more housing further down. No?
When you say if they pay, do you mean if they pay for public open space or do
yes.
you mean if... Yeah, so the public open space and the offset areas are two completely different issues. They're completely different parts of the planning scheme and they're dealing with completely different matters. So if council were to not require land for public open space but was to require a cash in lieu contribution, they would still be required to provide the conservation area under the Part 5 agreement to meet the planning scheme requirements in relation to those matters. They're very, very separate matters. So if they were to pay the cash for the public open space, it would make no difference to the conservation area and the amount of developable land.
Thank you. I'm no clearer than I was before. Thank you.
I have a question. One question, and I don't think we'll need the map. I can wait to sit down. I'll just wait for her to sit down. So just for me to be absolutely clear, if we vote for this amendment, we will lose a active transport pedestrian link. Is that correct?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. If you were to accept this amendment, then there would not be a connection for the public through that area. The land would be retained in private ownership and there'd be no legal right for the public to access that. If I may, I'd just point out as well that the way the amendment's currently proposed is that there would be no contribution for public open space being proposed either, because there's no condition in the
existing recommendation for a payment of cash in lieu contribution because the condition required the provision of land. So just be aware that if the amendment as proposed would not require any public open space contribution for this subdivision. But you could add a condition requiring cash in lieu contribution. The other thing, if you don't mind, in the terms of the condition, I'd also suggest that Condition 1 should be amended to reflect the normal standard Condition 1, because at the moment the wording says that they need to submit amended plans. Actually, they don't need to submit amended plans if you take out the requirement for the public open space as land, because their current plans don't show that. So I would suggest that Condition 1 should just be amended to reflect the normal wording, which is just the approved in accordance with the endorsed plans or the submitted plans.
What about if the amendment is carried, then we'll deal with that in the substantive, if you're happy with that?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, we just change the words the normal in accordance with the endorsed plans.
Yeah, otherwise we'll be here for 10 minutes or something that might not carry anyway.
Sure.
Councillor Fox.
I just wanted to speak to the amendment. I'm aware of the socio status of many residents that would like to catch the bus to or walk through this section of woodlands to catch the bus at the Huntingfield turnaround, but also go to the schools. The Tarama and St Aloysius schools are in Huntingfield, as well as people from those areas wanting to get up to Kingston Town and the shopping centre. And I think that's why there's a well-worn path through this piece of land. So I endorse the fact that the staff are recommending that we open this linkage. It's not necessarily a linkage that would otherwise be available to these people, because they're not going to walk along Channel Highway to get there. They're coming from the Redwood Road area, from the area around the Fire Brigade, all that underprivileged housing area where people have not got cars and they would like to walk to Bunnings or down to the bus stop at Huntingfield. So be aware that it's not just a recreational link, but it's actually a socially inclusive link for people who are underprivileged. Thank you.
Councillor Loss, would you like to sum up? Okay, the amendment was put by Councillor Fox and it was seconded by Councillor Bastone and... Sorry, Councillor Wass. Did I say Fox? I meant it was moved by Councillor Wass and seconded by Councillor Bastone. And the amendment deletes the words but modified to show and then the dot point following that under Section 1. All those in favour of the amendment, which means deleting them, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against?
Aye.
We'll have a division. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Councillor Bastone and Wass, and those against, Councillor Street, Reet, Westwood, Fox, Cordova, Midgley and Winter. The amendment is lost. Back to substantive debate. So the motion hasn't changed. There's further speakers. Councillor Fox.
I need to say that I think we're all...
You're summing up, please.
I'm summing up, I think. I'm really pleased that I had the discussion with the planning staff before this meeting on this issue, and I'm really pleased that they've been able to express the situation clearly and explain it all to us, even on the map on the wall in front of us. It makes such a difference to have the visual image and the concepts and also the history explained to us so clearly. So I would like to thank the staff for that, and also thank you everybody for asking the questions and looking carefully at this issue, and I think we understand it better now than we did before. Thank you.
Okay, the motion is moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Midgley, that the Planning Authority resolves that the development application for subdivision creating
additional 20 lots, stages 4B and 4C at 41 Alfred's Garden, Kingston, for JMG Engineers be approved subject to the following conditions. They're listed within the recommendation. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against, the motion is carried unanimously. Next item, the Planning Authority session is adjourned. The open session of Council commences at 8:25 p.m. Would anyone like a break? Well, those at home will take a break until 5 or 10? 10. Okay, we'll do 10 and then we'll go through to the end after that.